Hello, I'm Charlie Bachtell, founder, CEO of Cresco Labs, and I'm proud to work in cannabis because I've never seen an industry that has the ability to create so much social impact and win-win-win scenarios.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Proud to Work in Cannabis podcast. Been really excited for this episode. Have one of my oldest industry friends, Charlie Bachtell, who is the founder and CEO of Cresco Labs. Charlie, I was trying to think the first time we met. I mean, was it 2016, 2017?
Oh, I remember it. It was
Okay.
I think that year wise, it might 2016, 2017, something like that. At MJ Biz in Vegas. I think it was a coffee kind of introduction. And you turned me on to what is one of my favorite podcasts, which is How I Built This. And we've stayed in touch ever since.
You're totally right. I think we were some of the only people doing coffee meetings at like 7:30 a.m. at MJ Biz, really the people making the most out of the trip. And then I also have a really memory of you, me, and Dina like riding in the back of a car out to one of your facilities, and I remember AirPods had just come out. So we like all had our AirPods in and we were doing calls all in the car on like separate calls. I don't know if you remember that.
I think we've had some fun adventures. Even we were just talking the last one in DC. It was great to see you down in DC. Was that maybe a month or two ago?
Yeah. Well, a lot that we want to cover today. To start out with, I would love for our viewers to hear how you decided to even take the step and decide to go into the cannabis industry.
All right, I'll try to give you the condensed version because I could go long with this. So at a very high level, as I mentioned on the intro, like why I'm proud to work in cannabis, the first time I really thought about getting into the industry was when my current home state of Illinois passed the Compassionate Use of Medical Cannabis Act. And I remember it was August 1st of 2013. I'm familiar with the subject matter my whole life. I grew up in northern Arizona in a fairly progressive town. Cannabis consumption was not a very stigmatized issue in my house or in the community I grew up in. But I could tell you, I also did not expect this to be the path that my career went down. But it was kind of right place, right time, right background. I could tell you within about 48 hours of that law passing, me reading the law that night. I went home, I read it. For those that don't know my background, I'm an attorney by trade. I was an attorney in the banking space at the time and sort of dealing with, I was maybe 3, 4 years into dealing with the sort of the regulatory tsunami that came into the banking industry post the kind of the Great Recession of 2008. And what I saw was this incredible new perspective on cannabis, where Illinois was truly trying to create an industry, a real industry, a trustworthy industry that could sort of address some of the maybe preconceived notions or concerns that sort of the general population that wasn't as familiar with the cannabis industry at the time may have had, legacy kind of stigma stuff. And Illinois was trying to develop a structure that could really kind of address it, and it seemed like they were looking for people that had maybe some of the capabilities in the background that someone like me could bring, and cannabis could meet up with somebody who had, regulatory compliance business background and create an industry that could change perspectives, truly, lead with regulatory compliance and develop something that could show a state, a population, that cannabis can be a normalized industry, a professionalized industry, and an industry of the future. So again, short version, within 48 hours, I knew this was the most interesting thing I would ever see in my life, something that impacts you know, the way that people think about medicine, the way that people think about criminal justice. It was part of a huge shift in just cultural perspective at the time, and also clearly it creates a new industry out of something that's been around for 5,000 years. So I, like, again, still to this day, it's the most fascinating thing I've ever seen. I read about it when I wake up. I read about it when I go to bed at night. And that's what got me to take that first step in looking into it. And there's a lot more that comes after, but
yeah,
I'll leave it there.
Yeah. So after, so this first 48 hours, you're reading the law, you're super excited about it. I think it's super interesting, similar to our favorite podcast of like, how do you actually go about taking those steps? And so it's like, you're like, this is what I'm doing. I mean, what did you do next that, you know, on hour, you know, 72?
Yeah. So it's something that I talk about. I have the good fortune to have been invited to be an adjunct professor at Northwestern Law School. And this is now like 5 years ago, still doing it. And I teach a course on the regulatory and legal issues in the emerging cannabis industry. And I start each one of those courses by telling the class, like, look, it kind of blows my mind that I'm here at a school that never would have accepted me as a student. My sister went there, but she's way smarter than I am. Wouldn't accept me as a student teaching a course on a topic that would have gotten me thrown out had I been allowed in. And the other thing I tell them, because it's part of the entrepreneurship clinic at the law school, is everybody in the room has kind of STEM backgrounds and want to figure out how to sort of pivot with their backgrounds and get into a more entrepreneurial emerging type opportunity. And I tell them, look, what I've learned about being an entrepreneur is there's two parts to it. You've got to be able to, one, spot the opportunity. If you can't see it, you'll never be able to pursue it. But the second thing is you have to figure out what you are going to contribute to help that opportunity achieve its potential. When I've seen those two things come together is where I've seen incredibly successful entrepreneurial endeavors take shape. And I do feel like it was just great fortune for me that I felt like when I saw this cannabis opportunity in an hour 72, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, like, I've just been through 5 years of craziness in this industry that I'm in, where regulation was flying at us from every different possible angle every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. We were a state state licensed bank, and so not federally chartered. So every state we operated in was different. California was different than Illinois, was different than Florida, and it went from, you know, unregulated to heavily regulated overnight. And also had this post mortgage meltdown. It had this stigma of a negative stigma attached to it. So how do you build a business that gains the trust of your other stakeholders, your consumers, your regulators, your local community, et cetera? I feel like I had 5 years of training for cannabis before I looked at cannabis as an industry. So again, for me, it kind of stars aligning internally. And then again, stars aligning just objectively. Like, again, that law was passed August 1st of 13. I want to say Sanjay Gupta's first documentary, Weeds, on CNN, aired within like 2 weeks. And then the Cole memo came out again within, all in August. So in the first 30 days that I'm looking at this opportunity for the first time ever, you have three of the most substantial, important watershed things happen to this subject matter. A state that really kind of wanted to try and figure out a way to normalize and professionalize the medical correspondent on CNN starting a documentary with apologizing that he should have looked harder and read more research that was being done in other countries on an issue and true medical benefits associated with it. And then that Cole memo of federal government coming out and saying, look, as long as states design programs that address the way that we think about cannabis, we'll let the states run with it. Those are truly watershed moments in the history of cannabis. And I was like front row and eager to learn right then.
What were your, at the time, so 2013, all these things are happening at the same time. And also for people listening that maybe haven't had this, like when entrepreneurs at least in my experience, sounds like yours, have this idea, they like cannot stop obsessing. And then to have so many like crazy things happen in the same month, I'm sure it was just wrapping you up, consuming you. What were your friends and family thinking? Because 2013 is definitely a different moment than 2023. So I'm always curious what people say to their friends and family.
Yeah, no, and I always have to remind people too of like, take your 2023 hat off and remember what cannabis, the public perception of cannabis was in 2013 was very different. And let alone at a public level, at a legislator level, at a regulator level, at a law enforcement level, like it was, so funny enough, like I said, I grew up in a household where there was no negative stigma associated with cannabis. And she's not embarrassed by it, but still to this day, my parents are daily consumers. You know, it was totally fine. The person that initially objected most to this was my mom. Told her about it, that Illinois passed this law, and I'd been about 3-4 weeks into the research and the evaluation, and just true, like you said, passionately digging into this. It was fascinating. And told her and my family about it. She said, look, I grew up in a place called Sedona. There's a film festival there every year. She loves attending the film festival. And she said, I just saw a documentary called Code of the West. And she said, I want you to watch this documentary because what it sounds like you're telling me you want to do sounds a lot like what this group of people wanted to do also. And if you still want to do it after seeing the documentary, then I'll totally support you. And so I watched Code of the West. And interestingly enough, I think our mutual friend Chris Lindsay is actually in it. And I told him that. And he helps me. He guest lectures in my Northwestern class. Chris is fantastic. I never thought that I would, again, our paths would cross the way that they have. But watch the documentary. And again, it was an unfortunate story in that documentary that focused on, and honestly, that to my knowledge, like one of, if not the only state program to kind of go backwards. But the way that they were talking about sort of creating the gold standard of regulation and compliance, I knew that there was another level that could be achieved. So at that point, I was comfortable saying, yeah, similar, but I know there's another level that could be achieved. And again, I felt like I was the skill set of what I had been forced to go through and develop, those muscles that I had to develop in the banking space over those years, prepared me to help shepherd the cannabis industry in the direction that I saw the Illinois wanting to go with it. And then, yeah, that was it. I was after I watched the documentary and let her know, nothing but support. And
were you a dad yet, or did you became a dad after all of this? I can't remember your timeline.
First daughter was born while I was writing the Illinois app. She was born in June of 14, and apps were finally due, I think, in August or September, if I remember correctly. So yeah, there's a pretty cool picture of me with her, you know, in one of those baby Bjorns on my chest. And I'm working hard on the app.
On the app.
I've got a beer. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so it's like all, I just feel like it's always super interesting to hear what's going on in people's lives. So it's like you're getting ready to submit the application. You're becoming a first-time dad. You're combating your mom who like maybe doesn't think you should go into this. So there's always so many factors that go into play when you're launching a business. Obviously, the application was successful. Can you walk us through that first day, that you opened up, and what was that like?
So for those that haven't been part of an application process, the only thing I could tell you is they're brutal.
Brutal.
Absolutely brutal. They're, you know, the final 5 days are crazy. And then the last three usually rarely include any sleep. And we were no different. And the funny thing is, afterwards, one of my co-founders who wasn't there at the end of it. So how do you think it went? I said, unfortunately, I think it was like a B plus. I said, we'll see. And if I remember correctly, I think there were 172 applications that were submitted in Illinois, and we ended up getting the highest score, second highest score, third highest score on our three apps. So if,
oh my gosh.
If I would tell you that was probably one of the more validating moments in my career, was that sort of just showed that we were thinking about this the right way. We kind of understood what they were looking for, and it meshed up with the way that I thought this should be done fairly well. So
that, maybe you could have gotten into Northwestern after all that.
Yeah, no. Look, I'm pleased to be an adjunct. So then you go it's crazy right out of the gate, and you got to tighten up the capital resources, because again, we were a little surprised at the success that we had. So there was a little cleanup work to do on making sure that we had everything, the capital that we needed in order to move forward. As everybody probably knows, this is a very capital intensive industry. And again, timing was good for us in 2013, 2014, 2015, when the public perception was starting to change. There was a lot more interested investors at that time than there are today. So we were just, again, stars aligning, kind of fortunate in when and where and how we got into the space. There's about a year worth of building out 40,000 square foot plus cultivation and production facilities. We brought product to market. Originally, we were only on the production side. We were not on retail. So I think we sold our first product into the market in the very beginning of 2016. Probably January of 16, the market had just launched. It was I have the pictures from the first batches that were being sent out, and it's hilarious to see, you know, that it's being done by like eight people, and you know, everything is in three totes, and it's very different than what it is now, but super proud. I would say credit to the Cresco team that's been a part of this from the beginning. Like we haven't rested much to celebrate. We acknowledge and we appreciate the things that we've been able to accomplish. But as you said at the beginning, I say it all the time, it's one foot in front of the other. Like, we're still so far from getting cannabis to where cannabis needs to get to that it's tough to... tough to take a breath.
It's super tough to take a breath. And I want to get into where cannabis needs to go. Could we quickly talk about the going public experience and what that was like, and what that was like for you to take the business public?
Yeah, I would say it's not the traditional go public story, because, you know, with cannabis being federally illegal, for those that might not understand that, you know, the publicly traded cannabis companies are publicly traded in Canada on the Canadian Securities Exchange, which is the junior exchange in Canada. So it's not even the senior exchange in another country. It's a junior exchange, but they're the largest exchange that will allow operators in a federally illegal industry like cannabis to list. I'm sure we'll get to it, but we're putting in a lot of work to change that and make it so these great U.S. companies, the big ones, the mediums, the smalls, and those that aren't in it yet, have access to all of the financial services and funding sources that any state legal business should have. But going public in Canada was exciting, but we're subject to the whims of a market up there. Not to get too nuanced or into the weeds on it, but it's not like going public in the U.S. It was a matter of necessity. It was, where can you get access to the capital that you need to build out that next building or that next store or go into that next state at a cost that is lower than the way that we had raised money up to that point, which is tons and tons of meetings with private capital sources. So again, exciting, great, but not where we need to get cannabis to. I think we'll have a different experience the day when we're able to go live on a senior US exchange.
Yeah, so that's perfect segue. Let's move into that. You've played a really big role in helping to form laws and helping to bring the industry forward. Can we talk a little bit about safe banking and specifically how that started and just like some history and what happened last year with it? Because I think a lot of folks are feeling pretty discouraged in this space right now, feeling like it's not going to happen and that we've tried so many times. So we'd love to hear from you, the history and what happened last year, and then we'll talk about how we go forward.
Yeah. So for me, like just even taking that one step back of like why we're so engaged for, as I mentioned at the very beginning, like why I'm in this space, right? It's the most fascinating thing I've ever seen from a social impact perspective and a win-win-win creation ability. I've never seen anything like this. And so it's always been fundamental at Cresco. We are a stakeholder focused organization. There are a lot of stakeholders in what happens with cannabis, from, again, the communities that you're in, the lot line neighbor who's across the fence from you, to the local chief of police, to the school board president, to, again, regulators, legislators, and different community groups. So there's a lot of stakeholders that are involved here. And when your industry is illegal, from our perspective, you better be stakeholder focused. You better understand what those needs of the groups and the perspectives around you have, and you better try and address them. And so for us, it's always been the focus has been making sure that cannabis continues to develop in a responsible and respectable way. What we say here is responsible equals respectable equals robust. Like for the industry to be what everybody wants this cannabis industry to be, it starts with being responsible and respectable. And so that's a message that we focus on a lot. We engage in that government affairs world, because again, when your industry is illegal, if you want to operate, let alone expand, you've got to change laws to do it. You better engage. Engagement is a core value of our company. So anyway, that's a little background there, but that's why it is fundamental to who we are, is to make sure cannabis keeps progressing for the benefit of cannabis. Then we can all have fun competing against each other, but we've got to make sure cannabis is successful first. That takes us to DC. Last year, I think, if I could summarize 2022's legislative initiatives in DC very quickly, I would say, I think there was a, when you're champions, you're quote unquote champions of your issue at a legislative level, really have a knowledge base that's still would be considered fairly superficial. And again, not necessarily their fault. They have 1,000 things that they have to think about continuously. And so really the obligation is on the industry to educate them, to be a resource for them, so they can make educated decisions as they make decisions on how to, proceed with this issue in particular. And I think there was maybe a bit of a late start on pursuing a viable path last year. CAOA was discussed earlier in the year, the Schumer Booker Wyden bill, and really, it's great that our subject matter has a champion like the Senate Majority Leader. I think a lot of industries would love to have the Senate Majority Leader be the leader on their issue, but that also comes with then sort of the obligations and nuances that come with that person being your leader. And they wanted to put forth a more comprehensive legalization bill, which again, I don't know that you'll have too many people in this industry object to. That's where we all want to get to. But there may have been an underestimation on how difficult that would be to achieve last year. So when the pivot came to a more measured and incremental approach, like safe banking, it was late in the process. And I think it just because of, again, there's nuance to the way that any of these state governments work, let alone the federal government. There's process, there's procedure. There's dynamics that are at play there. Nothing is independent of anything else, right? There's connectivity between all these moving parts. So you have to thread a needle anytime you get legislation passed. And I think what we found at the end of last year was just the good policy was there, but it didn't make good good politics at the time. And unfortunately, I've heard that saying too many times over the last 10 years to forget it. But yeah, good policy doesn't always make good politics. And I think we were a victim of that at the end of last year. That's why you also see where cannabis started 2023 was right off the bat, kind of following what they call regular order. That a bill goes through in order to become law, it goes to committee, it has hearings, like, oh, that's why all these things that we're seeing develop in DC in the first 4 months of the year, 5 months of the year have been really encouraging. So that's why I look, I'm as disappointed last year as anybody else, but I think the work that was put in last year, in educating our legislative champions on what this industry really is like, and what would be needed in order for them to achieve the objectives that they have with cannabis was important. And I think even the data and the facts that we're seeing develop in the first part of 2023 are important for them to see, again, in what they really need to do from a legislative standpoint to achieve the objectives they have for cannabis this year. So I'm encouraged.
Yeah, I remember when we were in DC last year, forget who was speaking to us. It might have been Speaker John Boehner, but they said, like, if you have a backpack and you're hiking up a hill and you keep on putting more and more rocks in the backpack, it's harder to get to the top of the hill. And it seems like, I mean, we added a lot of backpacks into our backpack at the end of last year, not in the end of last year, with the comprehensive bill.
Yeah. And look, we're a maturing industry. I think that's a better way of saying it than we're an immature industry. We're a maturing
yeah,
industry.
Exactly.
And I think that we still have a ways to go on that. Like we need a cohesive voice in DC. Mm-hmm. And that's still one of my concerns, and one of the things that we're working on is there's also kind of a narrative that's developed in DC that there's disagreement and there's fragmentation within the industry. And we really need to have a cohesive voice down there in order to make this, just like it is with any other sort of big project you're trying to accomplish, you're trying to take away as many of the opportunities to say no to it as possible. You try to make it as simple as possible for them, for the decision makers to understand it. And that's, usually putting yourself in the best position possible to get a yes.
So when you think about comprehensive voice and comprehensive message, in your opinion, what should that comprehensive voice and comprehensive message be? Like, if I'm a business owner and I'm going to DC next week, which I am, what exactly should I be saying to the folks that I work with? Or if I'm an industry employee that's having a conversation with somebody, what, in your opinion, is the comprehensive message that all of us need to be getting across?
Yeah, the kind of cohesive message is one of we have the opportunity to pass incremental change. I think there is bipartisan support for incremental change here. I think what we all should be doing is we should be trying to make that piece of legislation as good for cannabis as a whole, right? The concept of cannabis, we should be trying to make it as good as possible for cannabis as a whole as we can, because they're willing to listen. The legislators are willing to listen. But right now we've got some different voices in the room saying we need this or we need that, or we don't need that or can't do that. And really what I think we need to do is just tell them cannabis needs to be treated like any other normal state legal business. And that means that we need access to the resources that any other legal state business would have. And again, that's in line with what safe banking is. But from my perspective, just not only from, again, like the perspective of a big company or medium company, a small company or an entrepreneur trying to get into this space, access to the full suite of financial services and all funding sources are needed for this industry to survive and succeed.
I like that. Cannabis needs to be treated like any other state legal industry.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward. For industry employees out there, which there's over 400,000 of them, I hope a lot of them are listening, sometimes it's easy to feel like I'm a patient consultant or I'm a cultivator, or I don't have a big voice. What can the industry... you and I were talking before we got started, there's 400,000 employees. It's a lot more employees than CEOs. So, and they're all extremely passionate about this. What can industry employees do together to help drive this movement forward?
Oh, make your voices heard. I know it's cliche, right? It's the get out and vote. Like, but it is, it's the, it's that. I can tell you that that's something that was confirmed for me as I've spent more time in this legislative arena at state levels and in DC over the last 10 years as ever before, is everybody needs to remember those are elected officials that are representing your interests in DC. They're there on your behalf. They work for you. That is true. There's no voice that is more important to a legislator than the voice of a constituent. So if you think about the two senators from each state that are in DC on your behalf, they want to know the people that elected them. They want to know what they want to see them advocate for in DC. And same with members of the House. And a lot of the members of the House are even closer to the communities that vote for them because they're up for re-election every 2 years. Right. So they're usually, you know, in wherever your dispensary is, wherever your cultivation production facility is, whoever's congressional district that is, they want to hear from you. And in the, you know, the true vein of another kind of common cliche of, you know, the squeaky wheel, or they listen to the people that make the most amount of noise, because whoever's loudest in the room, whoever gets that attention, gets that attention. And so that would be the ask. And I think, look, that falls on the CEOs and the other sort of management at companies, is to activate, to educate and activate. Those are kind of the two things we talk about all the time when it comes to these things, educating and activating, whether it's a legislator, but also whether it's our own teams in our own companies, of educating and activating them is the strongest thing that we could do to get the change cannabis needs.
So Charlie, the last topic that I want to talk a little bit about is hiring. And for you at Cresco, what do you look for when you're hiring your employees? And in your opinion, who succeeds at Cresco? What's the type of people that are succeeding and being really successful within Cresco?
At the risk of overgeneralizing, what I've seen be successful in this industry is people that are part of the industry because they want to be part of the industry. And where I've seen challenges are when people become a part of this industry because they think of the opportunity that the industry kind of creates for them. I think this industry is so challenging with the ebbs and the flows and the you have to, you know, build the plane while flying it. Like, all of those things are true. You have to love problem solving. You have to love being in an environment that doesn't have a stable foundation, because rules can change, regs can change, things happen. You've got to be able to pivot. You've got to be flexible. So that usually takes a certain type of person that really wants to be part of again, helping that opportunity achieve its potential. That's true for the entrepreneur. I would say that's true for any team member that wants to be a part of the cannabis industry too. You've got to prioritize the success of the industry. And again, from what I've seen all throughout our organization, is where people have that focus on making sure that cannabis develops the right way and that the industry is successful, that leads to company success and individual success in the organization.
I love that. And if you are looking for a job at Cresco, you can go to vanks.com/Cresco Labs. There's hundreds of jobs. I feel like you are one of the companies that is hiring quite a bit in the space. And to get people pumped up about taking one of those jobs, my last question for you is, what are you most looking forward to over the next, let's call it 24 months in cannabis? What is the thing that, if I was joining the industry, potentially joining your company, like, what can I be fired up about for the next 24 months?
Look, I think just in looking at this realistically and objectively, like I do, just like any other industry, cannabis is not a magical industry, right? We're in a period of time here in 2023. It's a tough economic environment, and there are these sort of moving pieces that you've got to be willing to engage and to problem solve, just like we talked about, and be committed to it. But the other side of that, right, is I truly do feel stronger than I ever have that this is a matter of when, not if, that we get that first piece of federal reform. And I think, again, if this aligns with what the individual is interested in, I don't think there's anything cooler. I don't think that there's anything more impressive to myself than having an impact on the development of what is going to be one of the largest consumer products categories in the United States at some point in the near future. Nothing would fire me up more than where cannabis is heading. And I do think we're there within the next 24-ish months.
Well, good. I know you said you guys don't really take a moment to celebrate, but I'm hoping that when the first piece of federal cannabis legislation comes through, we can find, you know, a day to celebrate a little bit.
I think it's we'll be able to do one cartwheel, and then it's back, and then it's back to work on getting that next piece of positive change.
Exactly. Well, I'm excited for the one cartwheel. So, Charlie, thank you very much for coming on. It's always great to see you, and appreciate your time.
Great to see you, Carson. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, host of Casually Baked, the podcast. If you're curious to explore the highly responsible side of cannabis, farming, and legalization, I'm here to help lighten the stigma and build your canna confidence. Download episodes now of Casually Baked, the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And journey with me through the evolving cannabis culture and discover how and why people like you are adding cannabis to their wellness toolkit. It's time to get casually baked.